hope to have some work done also side by side. To introduce myself, I belong to a vanishing breed of cosmologists who don't believe in Big Bang. I hope I got the negatives right. The reason is, when I was a research student back in 1960, long back, I was a student of Fred Hoyle, who is very well known. And at that time, there was a whole range of a menu of cosmological models available to look at. And gradually, that number has shrunk. And people have come more or less to the conclusion that they've got the right answer. So I want to express an alert here that it's not, the problem may not be completely solved, and no doubt there are a lot of cosmological observations which need to be explained, and Big Bang or the standard cosmology does that in its own way, but it's possible to look at the same observations from another point of view, from the point of view of an alternative cosmology. And how this can be done, I'm going to describe today. So the motivation, I want to go back to 1990, when five of us wrote a paper in Nature, the reference is given here. The authors were Arp, Burbidge, Hoyle, myself, and Vikramasinghe. And we wrote this article as a critique of standard Big Bang cosmology. And the actual title of the article was "The Extragalactic Universe: An Alternative View." And what we wanted to show was that the Big Bang was not the last word, and one should look at alternatives as well. Now, so why is the standard Big Bang cosmology not the last word in the subject? That is the question. One could argue that there are several unsatisfactory features of the standard model, and examples are, for example, it begins in a space-time singularity, and that in itself makes you wonder whether this is sound physical theory, which starts from a singular origin. We can also raise the age problem, which keeps coming and going. What it means is that if you look at any galaxy or star, is it likely to be older than the age of the universe? Because the age of the universe is finite, starting from the Big Bang. And there are several cases which are of this kind, where the ages of galaxies or stars, specific stars, may be older than what is called the age of the universe. So one could argue on that ground. Then yes.
I mean, I think usually now the idea is that now that we think there is a cosmological constant, then the age of the universe is longer than we thought. So I don't know of any well-known examples.
Yeah, yeah. You are saying that in 1990 there were no cosmological constant.
Actually, these are all from 1990.
So now you can also say that there are too many epicycles, and Big Bang cosmologists get upset when I show this particular thing, because epicycles are something not associated with a correct theory, but indicate too many assumptions. So here you start with the FRW at the bottom left-hand corner, the Friedman, Watson, Walker model. Then you have an omega lambda, which is the lambda Nia has just mentioned. Then n-body simulations, you can make your own recipe of how the galaxy formation took place. Then dark matter, that non-baryonic, baryonic, how much non-baryonic, etc. Biasing, where is it and in relation to visible matter. And then inflation, although people talk of inflation, I have yet to see a unique physical theory which gives rise to the inflation that of cosmologists want. And right at the top is quantum fluctuations. So when you have any doubt as to what went on, you can put it back into quantum fluctuations. And when quantum gravity is finally sorted out, maybe we will understand what quantum fluctuations are. So that is why I have put too many assumptions in the standard Big Bang model. So one can say that most of the present work on cosmology, Big Bang cosmology, is based on initial conditions and modes of evolution that are neither directly observable nor based on established physics. So what I want to very briefly say is that when you take the standard cosmology, you go on observing with the best telescope further and further out. But at some stage, you will hit upon the surface of last scattering, which is where coherent images can be seen. Beyond that, you cannot see anything directly. So you make assumptions about what it could have been. And the assumptions that you make are also based on physics that you are extrapolating. So when you go to grand unification, those energies you cannot observe with accelerator physics. So you are dealing with highly speculative matter. Then also it leaves out phenomena that are observed but not explained, like explosive, highly energetic cosmic sources, anomalous redshifts, quantized redshifts. These are issues which are no doubt controversial, but which have not gone away after a lot of observations. And in fact, more observations are coming up to support or to highlight these particular aspects. So when we made this kind of criticism, and which I am making now, there is always a counter criticism made by the Big Bang party. If there is no other model, we have to make do with the standard Big Bang cosmology and expect that these difficulties will either be solved or they will go away. That is what the Big Bang supporters say. So in a way, they want to throw the ball back in our court, the critics' court, by saying you produce a model which is good enough or comparable to Big Bang in its success, then we will take it seriously. So this was the whole idea, which led in 1993 for three of us, three out of those original five who wrote the Nature article, that is Hoyle, Burbidge and myself, to propose an alternative cosmology, which is the reference is given in Astrophysical Journal, and it was called the quasi-steady-state cosmology, or QSSC. So since then, this 1993 article, we have written several papers in all refereed respected journals, so they should be available for anybody to read. And eventually, around year 2000, we wrote a book which is published by Cambridge University Press called A Different Approach to Cosmology. And it had a tongue-in-cheek subtitle which says, From a Static Universe Through the Big Bang Towards Reality. So what is the quasi-steady-state cosmology which I want to talk about today? So let us ask this question, what is the cosmology, what are its parameters and epicycles? So any theory that you propose is bound to have certain number of assumptions. So what are the special assumptions that go in here? How does it explain the present phenomena of relevance to cosmology? This is the most important aspect, that any alternative theory must do at least as well as the Big Bang in explaining standard observations. Then what new predictions does it make that distinguish it from the standard Big Bang cosmology, which is also an important guideline for any observer who wants to test one theory against the other. So there should be some issues on which these two differ. If they don't differ at all, then it does not become scientifically interesting. So I would like to first explain the basic feature, what the theory is about. So it has an underlying field theory, a theory of gravity that originates with Mach's principle and leads to gravitational equations similar to general relativity, with the addition of a scalar field. So the equations, as you see on the board, this left-hand side is like the Einstein part with the lambda term. On the right-hand side, you've got the Tik is a general matter tensor, but there is also a scalar field C whose derivatives are given Ci, Ck, and there is a minus F in terms to show that it is a negative energy scalar field. So nowadays people talk of phantom fields, and this is similar to what people know in terms of phantom fields, although this dates back much older to 1960s when I was doing the graduate student of I was graduate student of Hoyle.
F is a constant.
I'm sorry?
Is F a constant?
Yes, F is a constant, yeah. And F is positive, so that minus sign indicates negative. The cosmological constant originates in this particular theory from the inertial interactions between particles in the universe and has the right order of magnitude of the order of 10 to the minus 56 centimeter square. So that's the magnitude of the cosmological constant. But there is a thing that the cosmological constant that we get here is negative. So whenever I say this, somebody who is well versed in Big Bang immediately raises his hand and says, what about supernovae with negative cosmological constant? So I will come to that. It handles.
Is that the four quantum corrections or opposite quantum corrections?
I'm sorry?
Is this a classical value for quantum corrections?
Sorry,
the value of cosmological constant.
Uh-huh.
Is this including quantum corrections?
You see, this cosmological constant is coming from the overall size of the universe. And as you know, the typical Hubble radius is 10 to the 28 centimeters. So it's the reciprocal of the square of the Hubble radius.
So I guess the question is, do you address the old cosmological constant problem, which is the vacuum energy is much bigger than
quantum theory? You mean like in inflation, you have a certain cosmological constant, and then you... No, I don't...
quantize the matter field in this theory. So if you quantize them, don't
I mean, here it only comes through. I mean, I don't have the underground underlying mathematical thing, but you take wave equations, and in that wave equation, like box plus 1/6 r m equal to 0 is a standard conformally invariant wave equation, and you have a lambda m cube term, which is also conformally invariant but makes it non-linear. So that makes it more complicated, but that is what leads to the cosmological constant.
Is this, there were these models a few years ago where people were taking waves and saying, I only want to have wave lengths which fit into integer values of a couple of waves. Is that what we're doing here to get that value?
Sorry, again, I did.
I think this model is much older than.
Yeah. it actually dates back to 1960s, and the, I mean the underlying field theory. So the C field terms arise from the inertial contributions at the ends of world lines of particles and describe the dynamics of creation. For example, one arrives at the typically created particle of Planck mass, because that's the only thing that you have in this theory. And so you, the mass of the Planck particle is described here. And the action principle from which the above equations are derived requires the endpoint condition to be satisfied at creation of matter. So here, normally when you draw talk of action principle, there are world lines of matter along with fields interacting. Now, in this particular case, the world lines have beginning or ends depending on whether matter is created or destroyed. So that creation of matter is related to interaction with the scalar field. And the condition for creation is that the square of the mass, which is the energy, is equal to the square of the CLCL, that is the energy of the scalar field. So you have to have balance of matter and energy in the creation process. But the particles, if you follow this particular rule, then the particles can be created only where the strength of the C field is high enough to match the rest mass energy of created particles. So you have the following situation that if you take here, like a static situation where you have a strong strong gravitational field, like in Schwarzschild case, if there is a C field present, then the strength of the C field rises close to the horizon, event horizon of the black hole that you may have. So you have here essentially CLCL rising very rapidly, and it will cross the MP square threshold at some stage very close to the horizon. So what happens is that you get, as a result, the creation condition that matter is created more near strong gravitational fields and not everywhere. Now, in the old steady state theory with which this is often compared, the matter and energy was created uniformly and homogeneously everywhere. So here you don't have that particular situation. So in general, you will find that there is no creation of matter except near very massive objects where gravitational field is large. And that particular formula which I wrote looks like square of the gradient of the C field is equal to 1 over 1 minus 2 gm over r, where m is the mass of the particle, mass of the object producing the strong gravitational field.
So, is the black hole at the center of the galaxy compact enough to create particles?
Sorry?
Is the black hole at the center of our galaxy strong enough to create particles?
So, what one would say that you have black hole type objects, very collapsed objects, but they will produce creation in their neighborhood and not anywhere else. So if you take nuclei of galaxies, you find black holes in the centers of galaxies, and that is supposed to come through this particular process. So one needs a near black hole type object to serve as the nucleating source for creation. Now, near such a mass close to the Schwarzschild radius, there is creation of new matter. And as it creates the negative energy C field also, because it is balanced by in terms of energy, you just don't just have matter created, but also negative energy C field to balance it. So the space-time in the neighborhood of this massive object expands rapidly because of the C field interaction, and the created matter is therefore ejected outwards. So what we are saying here is that you have an explosive creation of matter in a finite domain. So what we call mini banks, rather in contrast to the Big Bang. And this is called a mini creation event in which new matter is explosively created, and yet there is no space-time singularity, because in the whole structure that I have described, there is nowhere any singular situation. The black hole-like object acts as a creation center. And it is proposed that the universe is driven by such mini banks rather than a singular Big Bang that is in the standard cosmology. So you have these explosive creations going on all over the universe, and each one produces a local expansion, and that generates an overall expansion of the universe. Driven by this particular.
Yes. So I guess I just want to repeat what Jeremy was asking, that you think there is a black hole at the center of the galaxy, for example, a million solar mass black hole.
Yeah.
So is there creation of matter happening close to that?
Yeah. It would be the statement that one would make that there are several examples of active galactic nuclei. There is a lot of activity near the galactic nuclei. Those are examples of creation triggered by black holes.
But the galaxy at the center of the black hole at the center of my galaxy is not an active galactic. There's very little activity. So why is that?
Which kind of black holes?
The one at the center of my galaxy, Sagittarius A star.
No, if you take the center of our galaxy, there is a mild kind of black hole there. And that is, if you look at the overall velocity distribution, there is increase. In fact, that is the reason for inferring there is a black hole.
Right.
So we would put it the other way, that the black hole is there and that is causing local explosion.
So should we see those explosions?
Sorry?
Do we see those explosions from the center of
our galaxy? Yeah, these... what I am calling as active galactic nuclei are explosive phenomena. I will be showing some pictures which are like gamma ray bursts, for example. They are explosive creation of matter. So the simplest such model, which is driven by this mini creation event, would have been the steady state model, in which steady creation activity will go on everywhere, and it would lead to a solution of Einstein's equations, which De Sitter type of expansion. This, however, a more realistic model has the universe expanding with a long-term steady-state factor together with an oscillatory mode in which the universe is, has alternative phases of expansion and contraction. So why this happens? So you can see it in the following way. You have first an expanding phase in the universe, which leads to the dilution of the C field present because of adiabatic expansion. Now the creation centers then become less and less effective, because if the overall standard of the C field is low, to raise it to a level where creation can happen requires a much stronger gravitational field. That factor 1 minus 2 gm over r has to be much stronger. And one gets, therefore, the condition that creation centers get switched off because they cannot produce any matter. And then while this universe is expanding, the negative lambda leads to contraction, just as positive lambda in ordinary models leads to expansion. It is that happens. So when contraction begins, you go to the other side. The C field gets stronger, and therefore creation centers are becoming more and more effective in producing more explosive creations. And contraction slows down because of repulsion of C field, and a bounce occurs. So when this contraction is happening, it doesn't go to a big crunch-like situation, because the C field gets compressed and then it reacts back and causes expansion. So you go from contraction to expansion, expansion to contraction, and you have therefore an oscillatory situation. So you end up by having a cosmological model in which the expansion of the universe scale factor is given by exponential t over p, which is the de Sitter part which I mentioned, into a oscillatory factor 1 plus eta cos 2 pi t over q, where what it means is that this is a time scale over which these local expansion and contractions are going on, and T over P is the long-term steady-state type expansion. So you have a more interesting kind of behavior of the universe, and this you also find that eta lies between 0 and 1, but doesn't actually reach 1, because this universe is non-singular. So, and we also assume it is naturally expected that Q will be smaller than P. So we will take the situation, and this is where our first epicycle comes in, that P is large compared to Q, and this is what is called the quasi-steady state cosmology.
So in Q not predicted by your model, by the other parameters of your model, you have to put them in?
Is
RP and Q predicted by the parameters in your model?
No, I'm not getting.
So you had some parameters in your model, right? So I guess you had F and other. Don't they predict the value of P and Q?
I will come to that. There are certain number of constants which have to be put in by hand, and certain constants which are related by the dynamics of the equation. So I will come to that soon. So what you see here. Here what you see is a long-term expansion running through this is going up, and there is expansion and contraction. We are somewhere here at this moment, because we see the universe expanding, and we look in the past. If you look far enough, we should see it contracting. So I will be coming to the observable differences later. So now we can do some comparison with standard Big Bang cosmology and observations. So the theoretical aspect, the quasi-steady state does not have space-time singularity as the negative energy field violates the Hawking-Penrose energy condition. If you go back to the classic work in the 1960s, you find that the C field gives you a loophole from singularity. Also, the magnitude of the cosmological constant does not present any problem. In the standard Big Bang cosmology, there is the cosmological constant problem, wherein the relic lambda from inflation is something like 10 to the power 108 times higher than the present observed value. So this was pointed out by Weinberg back in the 90s or so. The question of quantization of negative energy C field, however, remains. Since the back reaction of the quantum creation process on the metric is difficult to work out, till then the creation rate has to be put in by hand. So this is something that we still don't know, how to quantize a scalar field like the C field in a non-linear background. So it's part of this problem of unsolved problem of quantum gravity. The unlike the standard Big Bang cosmology, the QSSC has an intimate link with high energy events in the universe through the mini creation events. So here you see the gamma ray bursts as an example of explosive creation. Then there are radio jets which are coming out of a central object, which you see here. Then active galactic nuclei and quasars, they show explosive creation of matter. And you also have, one could also argue that the clusters which seem to be seen to get as bound entities expanding can be linked to mini bang origin. That means mini bangs which produce the whole clusters of galaxies. Well, if you take a cluster which is could have up to 1,000 galaxies, so you really, your mini bang has become quite big in that particular case. So what I am saying is that there are many different types of bangs of different scales, and you see these explosive phenomena on different scales in the universe, and this is a way to understand them. Now here, what we did was a toy model for galaxy formation, in which we took a cube of volume and put something like a million random points which uniformly filled up, and did the following thing. We took a slice of it. So when you take a slice, get 1/10 of, slice the cube in 10 bits. So you get that. And you choose at random certain points from this and assume that creation of matter produces another neighbor to it, which eventually becomes a galaxy. So, and you expand the cube so that the total number of points is the same as before per unit volume. And you keep on expanding, creating new particles, and doing this, taking a inner cube. So when you do this, it no longer remains random. You see there are gaps here. So superclusters and voids, these can form. through this creation process. And if you do the two-point correlation analysis, which is shown on the right-hand side, we find that we do get the 1.8 slope, the power law with 1.8. These are the lines that are shown, and you find that ultimately it settles down to 1.8. Now, this is done through some kind of fractal process, because we have always expanded, created something new, expanded again, and it leads to that. So this work was done by, I mentioned Ali Nayari was my student, and some others. And the ABJ paper in which this was done about 15, 20 years ago. So this shows how it can be done. Of course, now we come to the observational explanation of cosmic microwave background. So how do we explain CMBR? So CMBR is a relic starlight left over from previous cycles. The estimated energy density of such radiation at the present epoch turns out to be 4 × 10⁻³ Earth per centimeter cube, which on thermalization gives a temperature of 2.7. Now, yes. Previous slide, okay.
Was there in this toy model where you reproduced the
this one?
Yeah. Uh-huh. This toy model, was there some free parameter in the model that needed to be fixed to get the slope correctly at 1.8 or
1.8. Now when you do this kind of 2-point correlation to analysis on this particular picture, which has been obtained after several iterations, then you find that the slope is converging to 1.8. That is, initially it may start with different value, but it ultimately goes to 1.8. Yeah.
Does this slope depend on the values of P and Q and F?
In principle, it should, but it is fairly robust in the terms of a reasonable variation of P and Q. Does not give you any different. So if you remember, the model had several oscillations going right back to minus infinity. So you will say that in each particular oscillatory mode, you will have new matter created that forms into stars, and the stars begin to shine the way we see today in our cycle. So what happens therefore is you have got relic starlight from all the previous cycles, and you want to know what has happened to that. So the answer is that if we find a suitable thermalization, we can get a temperature of 2.7. Now this particular 2.7 comes out as a surprise, that how did it come? Of course, what we have put in is the present starlight to get an idea how much it is there. Now I want to tell you one episode which I heard from Fred Hoyle. So Hoyle, Bondi, and Gold, they were the originators of steady state. So around 1955, they were discussing what happens to all the, let us say, all the radiation which the stars would emit if they produced all the helium observed in the universe. You see, normally the stellar contribution to helium in the universe is much less than what is observed. So they said, let us suppose that there was an activity in the past which produced as much helium in stars as we find today. Then they said that if that starlight was thermalized, what temperature will we get? And they came to a temperature of 2.8. And Gold said that we should publish a paper saying that in the steady state universe, we should get a radiation background of 2.8. But Bondi and Hoyle overruled him, saying that we don't know what thermalized that radiation. So until we can say something about thermalization, we should not do that. Whereas Gold kept arguing that any radiation which has been around for long enough time will somehow find a way of getting thermalized. So let us not worry about 2.8, about this thermalizing agency, but see, concentrate on the result of thermalization. But they wrote a paper in which they did not make this prediction. And later on, they regretted it because they would have been the first to say that there is a correct temperature coming from not a Big Bang origin, but steady state. Now here, the something similar works because of different stars produced. Each cycle is similar to the present cycle, and you are getting a finite relic radiation because of the fact that it's exponentially expanding. So you get this result. So what agency thermalizes in this particular QSSC? The answer given is metallic whiskers that are formed from condensation of metallic vapors ejected by a supernova. As we all know and agree that supernovae produce metals inside them, and they eject metals which are very high temperature vapors, and these vapors after some time will cool down. And laboratory experiments have shown that such vapors condense as whiskers and not as spherical balls. So this has been actually observed by direct experiments. So if you take dust density, typically 10 to the minus 35 to 10 to the minus 34 grams per centimeter cube, made of such iron and carbon whiskers, then it is adequate to thermalize the relic starlight, and that produces, as you see here, the log of wavelength against, you have the kappa, which is the absorption coefficient produced by the absorption produced by these whiskers. So you end up by a fairly good theory of saying how the radiation is thermalized. And the kind of density that you need, dust density, is 10 to the minus 35 to 10 to the minus 34 grams per centimeter cube. And the point is, if you have this density, then your supernova dimming, distant supernova looks dimmer because of this particular dust absorption, and you get the correct answer for supernova results. But before I come to supernova, let me mention here that the contributions from the latest star clusters of the present cycle appear as minor fluctuations in this microwave background radiation. You go to the latest minimum in the scale factor. At that point, the radiation produced has not had time to get into what you call thermalized state. So it is, you see it as fluctuations from thermalized radiation. And the power spectrum of such homogeneities has been computed and you can compare it with observations. So here you see two figures. One is the Big Bang, and the other is the quasi-steady state in different colors. And these are the power spectrum analysis done on the observation. So they do, certainly agree with each other at the earlier lower values of L. But when you go to the larger values, there are some differences. And perhaps one can make more observations. I think the blue one is a Big Bang, and red is quasi-steady state.
Isn't that just the data, blue and red? I would think that the curves are the model.
See, this part is up to here. They seem to have good agreement with each other. But here, you see some differences. And one has to go on. I mean, these are based on the Wilkinson data. And one can do further comparisons with as it becomes available. Yes. Sorry? Dark matter.
We do assume there's dark matter.
No, see, we don't need to assume non-baryonic dark matter, but the dark matter that is present can be all baryonic in this particular cosmology without any effect on the other aspects like deuterium production and so forth. So dark matter is certainly included in all these calculations, but not there is no statement whether this is baryonic or non-baryonic. So now we come to the MZ relation for supernovae. Again, you have here red and blue. Blue is the standard Big Bang, and red is the quasi-steady state. And the observations are generally, when you do the chi-square test on the goodness of it, you find that this USSC, if not as good as standard Big Bang cosmology, it is reasonably good, statistically acceptable. So, and the other point was that the density of dust that you need in order to get the best fit for supernova data is the same density that you get for thermalization of CMBR. So there is a good cross-check on it. Then the mini-creation events that we talk about generate gravitational waves if they are anisotropic. And the expected peak effect is not in the optimum range of LIGO and other observations, but even the tail may be detectable. And in fact, the present work which I am engaged in is trying to estimate not only the individual events, gravitational waves, but a gravitational wave background, which is produced by such explosions taking place all the time. So you'll get a background, and one can compare with the Big Bang prediction from inflation. So this is some work has already appeared in monthly notices, but we are at the moment trying to do a more thorough job. Now the distinguishing tests between the two cosmologies is one is high redshift objects. In the quasi-steady state cosmology, we don't have epochs of very high redshift because it bounces back, so it doesn't go to very small size of scale factor. So finding objects of redshift greater than or equal to say 10 will pose some embarrassment for QSSC because it would be hard to fit into those. Then the near absence of dark matter, the density parameter omega naught exceeds unity in the QSSC for flat models. Hence, if we do not find sufficient dark matter to make up for high omega, the simplest QSSC models are ruled out. Because there is an omega for the C field also, which is negative, you require a bigger omega. And if you don't find so much dark matter, then QSSC may be in trouble. Then lack of optical depth of millimeter waves. The cosmic microwave background in QSSC requires thermalizers in the form of metallic whiskers, which are strong absorbers of millimeter waves. So if we see bright emitters of such waves of high redshift, say around 4 to 5, then the QSSC has to assume that the redshift is not due to distance but due to some other anomalous effect. So this could be an awkward test for QSSC. Then the magnitude and redshift relation of supernovae, one could go into further depth and see what happens in the two cosmologies. Then lack of evidence for explosions. The QSSC relies on explosive creation of matter. If detailed examination of active regions of high energy production show lack of explosive outward motion, then QSSC loses its major motivation. And observations of blue shifts. As you saw, the red shift goes up to a certain maximum, then it starts decreasing. And one should be able to find blue shifts of the order of minus 0.1 because the blue shift. But if they are found, certainly they will be hard to explain in the Big Bang case. The kind of magnitudes of galaxies of this redshift, blue shift, is around 27 magnitude. So this new class of telescope, 30-meter telescopes, those may be able to single out which cosmology is right, whether the blue shifts exist. And other thing is that if we find stars which are much older than 14 giga years, which is the age of the universe, if we show this, then it will be hard to sustain the standard cosmology. About a year or two ago, we did look for one particular sample which showed all the features of stars of age of 20 giga years. There was a loophole there that reddening that was being seen could have been due to dust. And so we could not rule that alternative out. And that is why we didn't go ahead and publish that particular result. But one has to keep looking. So the conclusion I come to is that cosmology is still an open subject and there is need for some independent thinking. And this is another tongue-in-cheek picture that Jeffrey Burbidge used to show. These are the standard cosmologies, all the ducks, geese going in the same direction. If you look at the very tail end of this thing, you will see some of them are going in the opposite direction. So at least we should do as well as ducks or geese. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Questions? John?
The original steady state model was disproved experimentally because of the distribution of galaxies not being uniform.
Mm-hmm.
What is the status of that.
Which type of model is this?
The original steady
state. Original steady state model was completely homogeneous, and it was flat, the k equal to zero, Robertson-Walker case. But that is not sustainable with present observations.
So this is overcome. This problem is overcome.
Yeah, I mean, this one,
Do you have another question? The standard interpretation of the background, the cosmic microwave background, thermal radiation, is that it's redshift.
Mm-hmm.
This, of course, works very well with the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an alternative. So how do you discredit the standard statement that the 2.7 degrees comes from the redshift, the temperature?
No, sorry. What exactly you want me to?
I'm just saying, in the standard cosmology, so-called Big Bang cosmology, you explain the 2.7 degree temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And the redshift of the temperature.
Yeah.
This is how it originally formulated. So what's wrong with that?
I wouldn't know the details of to say what.
Redshift has to enter in because you do have
expanse. There is redshift here as well because this time again.
There's redshift involved in your model, the quasi state.
Yeah, the redshift is involved everywhere in it because you take at the time of emission of radiation, what the scale factor was and what is it at the time of reception.
Yeah.
So ratio of those is the same formula that Big Bang uses. The redshift is not...
It's the same form.
Yeah, it is not because of any other reason.
It seems that the idea is that there is a production of radiation by stars over these many cycles, and then there's a continuous redshift as well. Mm. And basically, there's a steady state where there's a thermal radiation that's basically left over from the space. So you have a constant redshift and then constant production.
Mm-hmm.
No, you rely on the metal whiskers to do the thermalization.
Yeah.
But does that happen when the radiation is more blue shifted? Or because presumably that needs to happen at various times as the universe expands and contracts.
Yeah. You see, thermalization will happen in each cycle. So the radiation that has been emitted up to that particular time in a given cycle, that radiation will be thermalized. And as you go from each cycle to the next, you get thermalized, better and better thermalization. At the same time, you have a certain component which is not fully thermalized. And that should be seen as the inhomogeneity. From the radiation,
Other questions?
Anyway, I am in room 461. Anybody who wants further details, I am happy to give.
Thank you, John.